From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Justify a two-length lead as they come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. Is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Far outside, a lead run from Giacomo. Giacomo surging, a fleet Alex, closing argument. Giacomo in the final drive to win Derby 131.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good morning, everyone, and once again, welcome to the show that launched a network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, back in the starting gate with you for the next couple of hours on the Equine Forum, presented all month long by FarmPaint.com here on HRRN. And happy to have all of you tuning in across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. And those of you listening digitally, and you're doing that, of course, on our website, horseracingradio.net. Bit of a chilly morning in the Bluegrass, as it is in many parts of the country. Record lows for the month of May. Just doesn't seem right. Everything's out of kilter this year, right? Think about it. The Kentucky Derby going to the first Saturday in September. All right, that's the first thing. Looking like the Triple Crown is going to be run all out of order this year and not going to be run 2 weeks from the first leg and then 3 weeks to the second leg. So things are up in the air in that respect. And then we have this record chill for many folks across the country here in May. I don't know. I want to start this morning by, first of all, saying thank you to all of you who tuned in to our Fantasy Derby broadcast last Saturday afternoon and the record number of folks who took time to play in our Fantasy Trifecta contest. I also want to say a special thank you to Claiborne Farm for their sponsorship of that show and helping to make it all possible. And really appreciate everyone, and believe me, there were many, who took time to send us emails, texts, tweets, letting us know how much you enjoyed that broadcast. It was really a lot of fun for our team to put together. And because of the popularity of the Fantasy Derby, I kind of have a feeling that you're going to be hearing more of those types of things here on HRRN. It was fun. It was fun theater of the mind, if you will, to take you on a journey mentally and let you envision something completely different. Got a feeling you're going to hear more of those things here on HRN. This past Wednesday, the 2020 Hall of Fame class was announced. Seven new members going to be inducted on August 7th at the Fasig-Tipton Humphrey S. Finney Sales Pavilion in Saratoga. Trainer Mark Cassie and two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan are the only two inductees to receive enough votes in the contemporary category. Jockey Daryl McHarga and racehorse Tom Bowling are going to be inducted by virtue of the Historic Review Committee. And three Pillars of the Turf selections, very special: Alice Headley Chandler, founder of Millridge Farm in Lexington; J. Keen Dangerfield Jr. Might not be familiar with him, a former trainer, but really made his mark as a chief state steward in Kentucky, in New Jersey, and in Illinois. An owner, breeder, and industry leader, George D. Widener Jr. All of those getting in as pillars of the turf, and I think each of them very deserving. So I thought, in light of those inductees, I thought it would be fun to make this, the next 2 hours, a special Hall of Fame edition of the Equine Forum. Headley Bell is going to be with me. He's the son of Alice Chandler and owner of Nakoma Bloodstock. He's going to be with me at 8:35 to reflect on his mother's legacy and what she has meant to the sport of thoroughbred racing and to the breeding industry in general. We'll talk to Healy about that at 8:35 Eastern. Should be a really, really delightful interview. Mark Cassie going to be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern. Charlie Lopresti, who conditioned two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan, is going to be with me at 9:40 Eastern time to reflect on his career. And then sandwiched in between those, coming up at 9:20 Eastern, Brian Boyer, who is the communications director of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, is going to be with me to talk about some of the other candidates that were inducted. Daryl McHarga, Tom Bowling, he'll reflect on them. He'll also talk a little bit about Peter Pan, who's in the Hall of Fame. This is usually the weekend that we celebrate that race at Belmont, but not going to happen, obviously, because the doors aren't open right now. But he'll talk a little bit about Peter Pan as well. The racetracks are going to be reopening pretty soon, several of them. I know that Gulfstream and Oaklawn and Fairgrounds did yeoman's work in keeping their doors open and being able to do things safely and the right way. And kudos to them for continuing on, at least Gulfstream with their meet. Tampa Bay Downs, same thing. Racetracks are opening later this week, and it kind of kicks off with Charlestown on May 14th. You have Golden Gate that has also received provisional approval to continue their meet on May 14th. Santa Anita looking at May 15th, pending approval from local health authorities. And Churchill Downs, it was announced, will open the doors again on May 16th. All of those without fans in attendance. So that leads me to the question of the day. If racetracks are given permission to allow fans on site, but there is still no COVID-19 vaccine, will you go? Yes or no? If racetracks are given permission to allow fans on site, but there is still no COVID-19 vaccine, will you go? And you can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to cast your vote. I want to hear from you, and I'll try to get to those responses later in the program. But that's our question of the day on Twitter and on Facebook. So in terms of a Hall of Fame edition of the show, I told you about the guests, but you look at the inductees that were selected, and they were selected from a group of finalists. And let's start with the horse category for just a minute here. The nominees, the finalists, were Blind Luck, Game On Dude, Harve de Grace, Kona Gold, Rags to Riches, and Wise Dan. There were six of them. Only Wise Dan makes it into the Hall of Fame this year. I voted for Wise Dan. I also thought Game On Dude was deserving of getting in, and I thought Rags to Riches was deserving of getting in among those six. But Wise Dan, he got enough votes. So Wise Dan, the only member of the horse side of things, is going to be inducted, and obviously Wise Dan was, in my book, a shoo-in, 1-9. Two-time Horse of the Year, multiple Eclipse champion, two-time Breeders' Cup winner. He won multiple races two times. It wasn't just the Breeder. He won races like the Shadwell Turf Mile and the big race up at Woodbine. The name escapes me right now. But he won that race twice, the Woodbine Mile. He won the Makers 46 Mile twice, the Woodford Reserve Turf Classic twice, the four-star Dave Handicap, and the Firecracker. Won them all twice. Yeah, he was a shoo-in. He was 1-9. On the trainer side of things, Mark Cassie, the only one to get in. You had Mark Cassie, you had Christophe Clement, and you had Doug O'Neill. I think Christophe and Doug will have their day eventually. But Mark Cassie, you know, Mark's been on the ballot the last few years and hasn't gotten enough votes to get in. But when you look at his overall resume, I think most people would say, well, the reason he hasn't gotten in yet is because he was lacking a classic victory. He had all the others. He had five Breeders' Cup wins to his credit, or has five Breeders' Cup wins. He has a total of 2,865 victories to date. His runners have earned more than $174 million in purses. He's an 11-time Sovereign Award winner as Canada's leading trainer, and in 2016 was inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. But he had been looked over, if you will, for the American Hall of Fame because, in my opinion, he didn't have any classic victories. What did he do? He came out last year, won the Preakness and the Belmont, and did it with two different horses, War of Will in the Preakness, Sir Winston in the Belmont. And I think that was plenty to push Mark Cassie over the finish line. And I'm really excited to visit with him coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern. Again, Heedley Bell with me at 8:35, Mark Cassie at 9 o'clock, Charlie Lopresti talking about Wise Dan at 9:40, and Brian Boyer in the middle there at 9:20 Eastern from the Hall of Fame to talk about some of the other inductees. When I come back, though, after our first break here, this show, as I told you, presented all month long here in May by FarmPaint.com. They have been a title sponsor of the Equine Forum show in this month for many, many years. And I'm going to get a chance to visit with Lori Douglas. I can say that. She's been doing the show with me for a very long time. Lori Douglas from FarmPaint and Catherine White of Tenda Equine Products. They're all kind of commingled under the same umbrella. We'll talk to them when I come back. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by FarmPaint.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at FarmPaint.com. That's FarmPaint.com.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Spendthrift Farms' popular Safe Bet program is back for 2020, featuring freshman sires Brody's Cause, Cinco Charlie, and Hit It A-Bomb. Breed to one of these stallions and watch their first crop of two-year-olds have great-at-stake success on the racetrack this year, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born in 2021. To learn more about the Safe Bet program, visit SpendthriftFarm.com/safebet or call the farm today. That's SpendthriftFarm.com/safebet. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast in the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness. And Sir Winston has moved to the center of the track under Joel Rosario to take the lead. On the inside, Jovia fights on. Tassinus is there. And then Tax between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes.
Larry Colmus with the call of both the Preakness and Belmont in 2019. Both won by now Hall of Fame inductee Mark Cassie. He was in the Canadian Hall of Fame. Now he adds the American Hall of Fame to it as well. Congratulations to Mark. We're going to hear from him coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Well, I told you that this program is presented by FarmPaint.com. It will be for the entire month of May. And every year I have the chance to visit with Lori Douglas from FarmPaint. And this year it was Catherine White who joined me from Tenda Equine Products to talk about the sensational job that they are doing with both of those and how they're handling things in this particular climate. And I got a chance to visit with them earlier this week, and I talked to Lori first. Lori, here we go again. We've done this for many, many years now, and it's always fun to catch up and hear what's new at FarmPaint.com.
Absolutely, Mike. I'm here and happy to chat with you today. And as always, I'm ready to rock and roll with you and answer any questions you have and tell you about some new stuff going on with FarmPaint.
You know, there are a lot of businesses and a lot of folks out there that are hurting right now because of the economy and what's happening with COVID-19, and our heart goes out to them. The farm paint side of things, that really hasn't been the case because of the fact that you're able to stay open and so many people are, as I mentioned earlier, working at home and around the barns and around the farms. You've really just kind of continued on as normal and been very busy.
Actually, we have. We've been extremely busy and we are loading up contractors every day and keeping our distance and staying safe like we're supposed to. But we are also delivering to all of our big horse farms all over Lexington, Kentucky. I mean, within a 40 or 50 mile radius, we're delivering on a daily basis, and we haven't skipped a beat. So we're happy about that.
Let's start by recapping the product itself. Tell me what makes farm paint different and makes it stand out from other products that are out there.
Yeah, we have an amazing product. Our biggest seller is our FP300 acrylic fence and barn paint. That's the black paint that you see all over these miles and miles of fence all over Kentucky. We've actually designed that with a very unique elastomeric polymer and a UV inhibitor. All of that being said, it has a lot of stretch to it. It actually soaks into the wood and allows the wood to expand and shrink in the different weather patterns so you don't get chipping, popping, peeling. More importantly, you get no fading. A lot of these asphalt-based, lacquer-based, oil-based products will fade out with the UV rays, you know, beating down on them on a daily basis. Ours will not. It will keep its nice, rich black shine for many years to come.
You have other products, too. It's not just about farm paint, but you have a product that we've talked about in the past called Thor Turf. What's happening there?
Yeah. We got a lot of some exciting things going with Thor Turf for sure. We've actually added you'll see under our product list on farmpaint.com, you'll see Arena Footing. If you click on Arena Footing under the products list, we've got the price of our fibered Thor Turf and our non-fibered Thor Turf. And all the details are right there on farmpaint.com. But I will tell you, we do have a new footing out, and that's the non-fibered Thor Turf. Getting great reviews on it. We have a very large ring out in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's basically a dustless sand. It doesn't have the fiber in it. And the reigning world, Western world, they're loving it. You can actually spin on it, slide on it, which is something that no one else in the country has.
Wow. Where did that idea come about?
Well, actually, the guy that owns Thor Turf, his daughter, Allison Thorson, she's a very big-time quarter horse girl now and doing a lot of reining on a high-end level. And she wanted to be able to rein on a dustless synthetic footing. So they made that happen for her, and it's working out great. And you can actually use it for any discipline. I mean, it's not just for reining. I mean, this footing is just like the typical sand that you would purchase, but that's dusty. Ours isn't dusty. You know, it's got a polymer effect to it. So it's really a beautiful product. So we're pretty excited about that.
Do the folks at Farm Paint and Thor Turf, if people call and they ask about either one of those products, do you have people, maybe yourself or somebody else, that will come out and kind of work with folks on what they might need and give them recommendations and those types of things?
Yes, indeed. Yep. We are... I've been selling the product myself now for 12 years, and I've kind of got it down pat and know exactly what to tell them, and especially once I hear their needs and what discipline they ride. And, you know, we do everything from installing the footing to grooming it for them, making sure that they know how to use our floor groomer, making sure that they know how to take care of the footing, you know, so it'll last a lifetime. And, you know, synthetic footings have only been out for about 12 years. So we know for a fact ours lasts for 12 years. And honestly, I'm sure it's going to last a lot longer than 12 years. So that's also a good thing because, you know, synthetic footings are not cheap.
Yeah, I'm visiting with Lori Douglas from farmpaint.com. You can go to farmpaint.com to learn more about the product and all the products actually associated with that company. You can also call 877-441-3276. That's 877-441-3276 to talk to any of the experts about any of the products that they represent. One of the other products that I want to touch on before we wrap it up, Lori, is the EquiClear Arena Dust Control. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great product also. A lot of people that, you know, do not want a synthetic surface, they actually just want their dusty sand not to be dusty. They would use our Arena Dust Control EquiClear. You can go to EquiClear.net. That's EquiClear.net and learn a lot about that product. It's basically like a high quality type of a liquid. It's completely green and eco-friendly. You apply it down on your dusty surface. We guarantee no dust or no watering whatsoever for 10 to 12 months. And after 10 to 12 months, if you see a little bit of dust popping up, we recommend that you use a third of the amount that you started with. So it's more of a touch-up process, and that's very cost-effective. So that's another great product for people that want to get rid of dust.
Lori, it is always a delight to catch up with you each and every year. We've been doing this together now for many, many years. I guess it's probably been 6 or 7 years that we've had a chance to be partners together and to have you here on the program. And really appreciate everything that you're doing for the folks out there in light of a very difficult situation right now with our country. I know that you guys are working hard to keep the doors open and really appreciate all you're doing. Keep up the great work.
Hey, thanks, Mike. And it's always a pleasure to meet with you. And once again, if I can help anybody, call me at 877-441-3276. I will be glad to help you with all your footing needs, all your paint needs. I can set you up with contractors and guide you in the right direction as to how to have great fences and great footing.
That's Lori Douglas. Farmpaint.com is where you can learn more. Going to turn our attention now to Tenda Horse Products, which you know they do a tremendous job as well. Going to talk with Catherine White. Catherine, last year it was Bill Bratcher who was in this position talking about Tenda. He's no longer with the company. You took over, and from what I hear, doing a remarkable job. When did you start with Tenda?
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Well, Bill was the one who told me that he was moving on and suggested that I interview for the job. So that was great. I came on at the end of July last year, and it's been great. It's been really interesting. I love to travel, and so it's allowed me to travel around the country and talk to lots of different people, and some in racing and some in not. So, that's where I started with them. This is my first sales job, honestly, but it's been good.
Wow. Yeah, and it has to be a lot of fun for you. We'll talk about the product here in just a minute, but let's talk about you for a minute. You have a horse background, so this has to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do. I started riding when I was 4, and I grew up in Nashville showing hunters and jumpers, and then went to school at UT, which I know is kind of a bad word here around Lexington, but I was on the equestrian team there and studied animal science and had various jobs in Lexington in the thoroughbred breeding business. I started as a Kentucky equine management intern. I did the internship in 2004. And worked on various breeding farms since then. And then also was able to work overseas. I worked in England and in New Zealand doing broodmare work and then also showing yearlings at sales and various stuff like that. So all of those things sort of led me to be able to do this job that I'm doing now, and it's great.
Do you still have horses and get a chance to ride a little bit?
I do, yeah. We have 4 off-the-track thoroughbreds. We mostly trail ride them, and I do a little bit of fox hunting here and there. But, yeah, I love it. I can't imagine life without horses in it. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to be involved with. So it's great to have a job and be involved in an industry where it all ties together.
Yeah, well, you fit right in on this program then. It's all about the love of the horse. There's no doubt about it. How about the product itself? Let's talk a little bit about Tenda. Explain, for people that have never heard of the product, first of all, explain exactly what it is and how it works.
So the Tenda brand of products has been around for about 45 years. It was started by a guy up in Ohio who raced standardbreds, and he developed a line of products for use on his own horses. And then when people started seeing positive results, then they started buying all the different things from him. His son-in-law took over about 25 years ago, and he's interesting because he's a former nuclear submarine commander, so I'm not exactly sure how he made the switch over, but he's great with formulations and stuff. And when he sold the company to the Thorsons, to Thorworks Industries, about 2 years ago, they've retained him, and he stays on to help with formulating the product. So we have a whole bunch, we have a whole full line of equine products. We have everything from supplement paste to hoof care to grooming supplies like shampoo, and we also have really, really good poultice and things for muscle soreness and liniments and stuff like that.
When you go out and talk to people about Tenda and the various product lines that are offered by Tenda, what are some of the things that you make sure you're letting them know about the product?
Well, we like to let people know that all of our products are manufactured with natural ingredients, and everything is made at either our plant up in Sandusky or the original facility down in Fredericksburg, Ohio. So everything is made here in the U.S. It's all natural. Everything's very, very consistent. You know, we're FDA approved and backed by good testing. So, you know, we have a big line, and so it sort of depends which products you want, depending on what type of equine stuff you're into.
Talking with Catherine White with Tenda.com. You can go to, well, TendaHorse.com is the actual website for the product, but Tenda is the product line. And as you heard her say earlier, so many different products for leg and muscles and salves, and they have hoof care products. It is really a neat website, and you can spend a lot of time on there looking through all the various product lines that they offer. Catherine, as somebody who has ridden horses your whole life and competed and now still owns horses and still rides, how important is that all-natural element when you're using products on your horses?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, I like to know exactly what I'm using on my horses. I don't like to have to read something and then figure out exactly what those ingredients are and have to do a Google search. And some chemicals and products can cause skin issues in horses if they're sensitive. Especially today, people are very well educated as to the things that they're feeding horses and what they're putting on their animals, and they want to know what's going into the things that they're using. And so I feel like that's part of why it's so important that you keep things simple like we do and, you know exactly what's going into all the products. And there are things that have been tested over time. I mean, some of the remedies that we have are fairly old school, but that's a lot of what people like. And people are returning from, you know, products made in laboratories to more natural ingredients.
Yeah, it's like that with everybody who owns, well, really any kind of pet, too. You're seeing it in the pet industry where a lot of the different foods that you feed to dogs and cats and whatever it might be are shifting to all natural products. And where is Tenda available, Catherine?
Mostly we sell through distribution. So online, you can buy from Big D's Tack. You can buy from Farm Vet. They're one of our newest distributors, and they're nationwide, and it's great. Let's see, Dover Saddlery also carries it newly. We're available in lots of local tack shops here around Lexington. Doc Lane's Pharmacy carries our stuff. KBC, Feed Bucket down in Simpsonville. I know they do a lot of they have a lot of clients out at Churchill, so they carry our line as well. So, and then there are lots of other places around the country. So we're not available quite everywhere, but we're working on it.
Catherine, if I'm not mistaken, there is a product that Tenda offers that can be very beneficial for horses with EIPH. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have a product called BNM. It used to be called Bleed No More, but now it's just shortened to BNM. And it comes in a paste that you would give pre-race, and then it comes also in a liquid daily formula. So if you have a horse that has a history of bleeding, then you would want to put them on the daily formula. If you've got a horse that you're not sure, or you want to give a little extra boost of it to pre-race, like 2 to 4 hours, you would give them the tube of B&M paste. And what that has in it is Yunnan Biao, which is a Chinese herb that's been around for ages and ages, and they use it in wounds. It's a coagulative. It's got coagulative properties in it. So that's the way it works to help with bleeding. So you give it pre-race, and then afterwards, we've seen really great result with horses. It can be used in conjunction with Lasix. It can also be used without Lasix. So either way, it works just as well. So that's a good thing to look into, especially nowadays with all the new rules that have been put out.
She is Catherine White with Tenda. You can go to tendahorse.com to learn more about all of the products that they offer. Catherine, as always, appreciate the visit here this morning. Thanks for taking a little time, and all the best moving forward with Tenda. Keep it rolling.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, my thanks to Lori and to Catherine for taking the time, and to Farm Paint and to Tenda for all their support of what we're doing here on the network. They've been with us for many years and greatly appreciated, as it is with all of our sponsors who are involved in our shows. Coming up next, a story presented by one of our longtime sponsors. That's the Lexus Store of Lexington. Looking forward to getting them reopened very soon here in the Bluegrass. Can't wait to have the showroom opened again. It will be under different circumstances, no doubt, but you'll be able to go out and see the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the amazing people at the Lexus Store of Lexington very, very soon. And this is your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, I will talk with Heedley Bell about his mother, who will be enshrined in the Hall of Fame coming up in August. Stay with me. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
In early August of 1919, Samuel D. Riddle's big chestnut 2-year-old man-of-war captured his 6th straight race and, continuing on unbeaten, carried 130 pounds, unheard of, by the way, of current racing practice, to that win in the $10,000 United States Hotel Stakes at Saratoga. The speed and stamina of Big Red had already become legendary, but there were horsemen who had reservations as to his ability to sustain his remarkable speed over a distance of ground. And though self-same doubters felt there would be a real test in his forthcoming scheduled races, the Sanford and the Hopeful, when he would face the very best 2-year-olds in training at the time. The son of Fair Play was a veritable giant, standing better than 16 hands and weighing in at nearly 1,100 pounds. He looked more like a 4-year-old rather than a 2-year-old. Oh, there were challengers to his credentials, all right. Trainer Jimmy Rowe had 2 in a Wild Air and Upset, although Man of War had whipped Upset in the aforementioned United States Hotel. And then there was Miss Jemima. On Saturday, August 13, 1919, 7 horses answered the call to post in the Sanford Memorial. One of the meeting's largest crowds, better than 20,000, were on hand to view the attempt of the great Riddle 2-year-old to remain unscathed. John Madden had Captain Alcock in the field, and the most likely contenders were Golden Broom at 2-1 and Upset, who was 7-1. Man of War was the post-time odds-on choice with the betting public at 1-2. Golden Broom was the inside horse with Frankie Ambrose in the irons. Man of War was in post 6 with his regular rider Johnny Loftus in the saddle. Golden Broom acted up considerably both in the post parade and at the start, showing both his nervousness and his greenness. But when the flag dropped at the start, Golden Broom was away winging. By the time the field had gone a bare 16th of a mile, Ambrose had the speedy youngster 2 lengths in front. Upset, Harry Payne Whitney's fine juvenile, who was also away like a rocket, and settled into 2nd place with Donna Connor 3rd. Man of War had gotten away poorly, highly unusual for the Riddle standard bearer, almost being left at the post. By the time Loftus had Big Red settled into stride, he was 6th as the field hit the clubhouse turn. By the time the field swung off the turn into the stretch run, Golden Broom was still winging away clearly in front. Man of War had improved his position to 3rd, cutting down the margin with every stride. It was Golden Brown by a length, Upset by an open 2, and Man of War 3rd. The rest of the field had given up the chase in mid-stretch, with Man of War 2nd. Upset had Man of War by a length and a half at the 16th pole, and Loftus dug in on Big Red, asking the colt for everything he had. 100 feet from the wire, the margin was 3/4 of a length, but Man O' War was running out of real estate. Upset was hanging on tenaciously. As they hit the wire, it was Upset, the number 4 horse of Harry Payne Whitney, still a neck in front of Man O' War, who was gaining slowly. Golden Brown had barely enough left to hang on for third. Captain Alcock finished fourth. The horse appropriately named Upset had indeed lived up to his moniker, and forever from that day on became part of a thoroughbred lore, legend, and mystique as the only horse ever to defeat Man O' War. It all happened in the Sanford at Saratoga, August 13, 1919. A great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
First Crop 2-year-olds by Airdrie Studs Upstart are the talk of the industry. At the OBS March sale, all six offered were sold for an average of $260,000, a spectacular return on his $10,000 stud fee. The $600,000 sale-topping colt out of Blue Burrow was one of two upstarts purchased by leading agent Mike Ryan, who said, "We won't find a better horse this year." Upstart has sired 101 First Crop Juveniles of 2020 and stands at Airdrie Stud for $10,000 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
On the inside, it's Sir Ivor moving up quickly now. During this stretch, it's Gordon Marcy, Czar Alexander on the outside, Cora Martin. But here comes Sir Ivor moving with a bold rush. They're in the stretch, an eighth of a mile to go. Czar Alexander, Fort Marcy. But look between horses. Sir Ivor closing with a big rush with Cora Martin on the outside. Here they come. It's Sir Ivor going right by the two leaders. Sir Ivor, and there's the finish. Sir Ivor, the winner by 3/4 of a length. Then Czar Alexander and Fort Marcy third in this field of eight.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Here in the month of May, Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. My producer, Lee Delapina, is in our Lexington studios. And that call you just heard, the 1968 DC International, Ray Haight of Bethesda, Maryland, the voice of Maryland racing from 1950 to 1970. His father was Walter Haight, whom the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters honor each year with their Walter Haight Award. And boy, what a moment that was, for not just for those who were associated with the great Sir Ivor, but for racing in general. And Sir Ivor, very special to Hall of Fame inductee Alice
Chandler, and Heedley Bell, her son, is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Heedley, first of all, good morning, my friend.
And a good morning to you, Mike.
Sir Ivor, how's that for a little trip down memory lane?
Well, you always make these great introductions. I don't know how you managed to pull them out, but they are always great memories. And what we can't forget about Sir Ivor is the great Lester Piggott, who was his jockey and pilot. And truly, he himself is just something very, very special.
Now, there's no doubt about it. And the reason I bring up Sir Ivor is because your mother, Alice, became the first American woman to breed an Epsom Derby winner, and that was Sir Ivor, and that was just 5 years after founding Millridge. Special horse, and he meant an awful lot to you and to your family.
He was the foundation, Mike, really. Her father died in 1962, Hal Price Heedling. He left her 286 acres of land that was part of Beaumont, his farm, and he left her four mares, one of which was the mare Attica. And so 3 years later, Attica produced this Sir Gaylord colt, sold at Keeneland Auction for $42,000 and bought by Raymond Guest, and went over and was trained by the great Benson O'Brien, and really started, he was a champion at two and then won the Epsom Derby, as you just so noted. And it really started the awareness of the American-bred horse for the Europeans, that they could come over and compete against them. And the astute John Magner and his team then started to buy the American-bred horse and won, I believe, five of the next seven derbies with American-bred horses.
Tell me about getting the news that your mom would be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Well, it was so neat, Mike. Particularly, my wife and I had just hung up talking to our dearest friend, godfather of Price, who had just been released a week before from the hospital after being in intensive care with coronavirus. And that was soaking in, and I looked down on my phone, and probably not supposed to say this, but Barry Schwartz was phoning, and he's a dear friend. And he said, "Heedley, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but your mom has just been inducted into the Hall of Fame." And this was 3 weeks before the public announcement. And so to be, you know, to go from one soak to another soak, it was really quite something that I hope I remember the rest of my life.
How about your mom? What was her reaction when she found out?
So mom's 94, and she's been dealing with dementia for some time, but it's really something. So underlying all of this, Mike, is that the fact that she is still here, that we could share this with her. So I phoned John Chandler, her partner of 48 years and such a big part of the Millridge life, of her life, of our life, and shared with him about it. And he said, "Well, look here. Here comes your mom down the hallway." And I said, "Well, Doc, have you ever FaceTime?" He said, "Well, yeah. Hold on. You know, Doc, he had to take all the earbuds out, and it got all kind of complicated. But here she came on the screen, and I said, "Mom, I've just heard that you have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. It's an extraordinary honor. Your father is in the Hall of Fame. He's your greatest inspiration, and you're our greatest inspiration, and you've been inducted into the Hall of Fame." And so the fact that she was here, that she's alive, that we could share that with her, the Doc could then continue to share it with her, is really quite something. I mean, she's 94. I mean, think about that. So she's outlived her years and such, but she's still here. And it's very meaningful to our family.
Heedley, her resume will speak for itself, and obviously it's a Hall of Fame resume, but when you think about your mom's legacy and what she personally has meant to the thoroughbred industry, how do you put that into words?
Well, truly what I think about, Mike, and it's always the case, but it's all those that helped you get there. And that's really so very important. And that would start with John Chandler, her partner of 48 years, and who had the great connection with all the Europeans and such like that. So when Sir Ivor wins the Derby, then, you know, the Maktoums and all these people, Prince Khalid, all these people became our relations, and that was important. My brother Reynolds, who was instrumental in diocese standing at Mill Ridge and gone west and paving the way for the early stage and phase of Mill Ridge. Our Bill Thomason, who was with us for 28 years, Duncan McDonald, who was our manager for 38 years, all of our employees who really celebrate Mom each and every day, and certainly our clients. I mean, it's just quite amazing, and they're still with us. You know, Toliato, Jerry Moss, the Ammermans, Rich Santulli, on and on, who've been a fabric of the Mill Ridge life. And without the clients and without these people, we all know that you never quite achieve. So for us, it's all a celebration of all those who are part of the Mill Ridge family. And that's truly what she would say, is it's not about me. It's about all those around. And I must say, underlying all of this is that Beaumont land, you know, the land where the horse is raised. And the example from her father, who really is her inspiration and the example for her. And so that's what I would say about it.
Visiting with Heedley Bell here on Horse Racing Radio Network, his mother, Alice Chandler, going to be inducted into the Horse Racing Hall of Fame later this summer, scheduled for August, assuming that everything can get back on track with the COVID-19 situation. We will gather, at least in part anyway, at the Humphrey S. Finney Sales Pavilion in Saratoga, and it should be a very special day. No doubt it will be for everybody who has been part of that Mill Ridge family for many, many years. Heedley, if I were to ask your mom, and I don't necessarily feel great about asking you to speak for her necessarily, but if I were to ask her to look back on some of her more memorable moments that she has had in this sport, what are some of those highlights going to be?
You know, Mike, I think she would just – certainly Sir Ivor was huge. And Gone West was huge, and Diocese. But then when you think from 2000 to, you know, our slogan of breeding and raising racehorses, of the 34 Grade 1 winners, and, you know, Point Given was in 2001, and I believe, or 2003, and Spain was right there in 2000, and, you know, the Thoroughbred corporate relationship and things like that. But underlying, her greatest memory would just be the, you know, as we know, she's a woman in a man's world, and she never really thought like that. She wasn't trying to be the icebreaker or anything like that. She was just trying to be really demonstrate her leadership as her father had done, and the love of the horse. And so I think her greatest memory was just to be able to share that land and to share these tremendous horses that have come off this land with all the people that made it what it is. That truly, it wouldn't be one particular thing other than Sir Ivor. Sir Ivor certainly, you know, that's the cornerstone. But just to be able to share it with so many people. She had a passion for the industry, has a passion for the industry, was a leader in every capacity. I mean, the people that she's touched, Stuart Brown, you name it, it's on and on and on of people whom are, you know, key integral part of this industry. And she was just a great example. So her greatest memory would just be the Beaumont experience, the Mill Ridge experience, and the land and the horse.
Heedley, when I announced yesterday that we would be discussing your mom and her legacy on the program, I received a really nice email from a listener who had gone back, and this is more involving your grandfather, but he had gone back and listened to a University of Kentucky recording that was made in 2007 with Henry White, where he described your grandfather and his legendary negotiation skills. He also talked about the fact that he would carry walnuts with him as he walked the grounds of what was Beaumont Farm, now Millridge, and planted them with his walking stick. He was an interesting and a very fascinating man.
Well, he was. Really, Mike. I mean, he was. Keeneland is his legacy and such, and the horses he raised as well, starting with the foundation mare Alcibiades, whom the race is named after, who's a probably great-granddaughter of Attica, who's the sire of Sir Ivor. And so he was truly an inspiration. I mean, he was a leader. He was infective in his he was all-inclusive, so he was infective with his personality and how he led. And he was truly, he's in all of our, you know, anybody close to our family, he is in our family, and he's certainly Mom's inspiration. She's our inspiration, as I mentioned. And so just, yeah, everything. So when we're on this land of Beaumont, I mean, we feel him, we feel her every day. And again, our employees to this day feel this. We all celebrate her, and we all celebrate him. And it's, we don't take this for granted. We try to share it back. As you know, Mike Price and I, with Horse Country and things like that, you know, they're the example of us of trying to share this incredible sport that we really have. If you cut away all these layers of stuff and get back to the basics of the land and the horse and the people, and just let it breathe. That's what we try to do. And this time that we've been dealing with this COVID experience, you know about our virtual tours and sharing three times a week, just walking the land, sharing the foals, telling stories. That's the result of our four parents. And so we're privileged to do that. We don't, you know, we really try to do it openly. And it's truly a gift.
Well, Heedley, the other element or the other aspect of that email from our listener, that this was something I didn't even know, that your grandfather insisted on concrete fence posts as evidence of his passion of performance and his eye on the future. Maybe a bit of foreshadowing as to what we would eventually see with your mom and with Millridge.
Well, Mike, he was a very practical person, and he did not like to do anything more than once. And he counted his pennies, and he was going to do it, and he was going to do it right the first time. And you see that in Keeneland. You know, if you go back and you look at that prospectus about Keeneland and the inclusivity of the people that were all part of Keeneland. I mean, Keeneland is the people's track. Keeneland is the horseman's track. Keeneland is the community's track. And that's the way he went about it, and he meant for it to be built to last a long time. And I think that's what you see. What you see in Keeneland, you know, as the example for our industry, as the Augusta for our industry.
Well, Heedley, I appreciate the visit here this morning. So much fun to discuss your mom, who will, again, be inducted into the Hall of Fame August 7th in Saratoga. That's where, at least tentatively right now, scheduled for that ceremony on August 7th. I know it will be emotional for you and for the entire family. And again, congratulations. And I'll tell you what, we have a segment on the program every week, which is presented by our friend Stuart Morris, that is called the Industry Star of the Week. And I can think of nobody more fitting than your mom to honor as the Industry Star of the Week on this Saturday morning. So let's do that. And again, keep up the wonderful work, and congratulations to her and to the entire family.
Well, you know, it's always nice to talk with you, Mike, and your team, and again, what y'all contribute to the industry as well, your fabric of, and our dear friend Sean Clancy and things like that. And it's just pretty cool that we have a chance to do it all together. So thank you so very much.
Thanks, Heedley. Appreciate the visit. Heedley Bell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, this segment presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, his entire team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy. Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. And again, congratulations to Alice Chandler. What a wonderful lady, and somebody I had the chance to meet for the very first time back in the late 90s when I was working at Thoroughbred Times. I can remember how intimidated I was walking into Millridge in that office for the first time. Kim Poulin was the receptionist. She was sitting there, and Miss Chandler came out, and she greeted me. And I can remember that moment, and it was really special, and she couldn't have been more kind to somebody who was just trying to get started in this game and get a foot in the door. And she was a wonderful lady, and it was such a delight. So congratulations, a well-deserved honor for her getting into the Hall of Fame. Going to get to a break. I will come back and get you set for the second half of the show as we continue a special Hall of Fame edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Power.
Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home four lengths to the good.
Performance.
It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Grade Stakes producer, Appealing Zophie. His exceptional first foals are arriving now. Taprit, standing for 12,500 at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
16th to go. Michelin was tripped out, and Michelin and jockey Joe Bravo will win going away. Going to be a good battle for second. Too tight to call, but Michelin, a 17-1 winner in 141 flat.
Michelin, the daughter of Darley stallion Bernardini, stormed home from off the pace to win the Honey Rider Stakes at Gulfstream last weekend, making her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini is the sire of 21 Grade Stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Taprit and Curlin have more, and daughters of Bernardini are now excelling in their second careers. In 2019, Bernardini was the leading broodmare sire with five Grade 1 winners, including Breeders' Futurity winner Maxfield, a son of Darley stallion Street Sense. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Duke of Mischief, Blaine comes under a ride. Arson Squad, Macho again is forced very wide, followed by Demarcation. Battle Plan down towards the final 3/16. Battle Plan has gone clear now by three lengths. In second is General Quarters. Here now chasing from out of the pack is Blaine. It is Battle Plan out in front. Blaine, though, is flashing home on the outside. Here comes Blame. Blame is going to take the Grade 1, Stephen Foster. Blame wins the Stephen Foster. Battle Plan in second, General Quarters in third, Giant Oak and Demarcation next.
Claiborne Stallion Blame with a big win in the 2010 running of the Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs. Looks like we will have a Stephen Foster this year as we continue down the road to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, and looking forward to that and trying to get back to some sense of normalcy very, very slowly. We have to understand that. It will be a slow process, but Churchill Downs set to open the doors for live racing on May 16th. Charlestown, as I mentioned, coming up on May 14th this week. Golden Gate received provisional approval to continue their meet on May 14th, and then Santa Anita May 15th, pending final approval from local health authorities. There will be different protocols in place. This will not be the racing we become accustomed to, at least in terms of the on-track presence, not just with fans, but horsemen also going to be dealing with some different protocols. And that's fine. That's fine. But to have the doors open is a step in the right direction. And our poll question today, I asked you, if racetracks are given permission to allow fans on site, but there is still no COVID-19 vaccine, will you go? And so far, 65% of HRN Nation saying, yes, we will attend the races even without a COVID-19 vaccine, just 35% saying that they would not go. A lot of things to look forward to over the coming weeks, and again, we'll see how the Triple Crown shapes out. More than likely going to be run like no other Triple Crown in history. The races will be shifted around. The dates of the races, the spacing in between the races will be completely different, and that's okay too. We will do it. We'll do it together, and as a community and as a racing family, we'll continue to move in the right direction. Hey, don't forget, if you are looking for live streaming and replays from nearly any racetrack out there, check out RTN.TV, the Racetrack Television Network. RTN has the most HD content of any streaming service and is available on many devices, including TVs, PCs, tablets, smartphones, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And as a special treat for all of our listeners, if you use the promo code capital HRRN, it's got to be all caps, HRRN, use that promo code, you're going to get the first 7 days of live streaming and replays absolutely free. Courtesy of our friends at RTN. Go to RTN.TV right now and type in that promo code HRRN, all capital letters, and you'll get the first 7 days of live streaming and replays for free. Want to remind you before I set up hour number two that all of our guests who appear on the program receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. All right, coming up next, I'm going to visit with Hall of Famer Mark Cassie. Charlie Lopresti will join me in the second half of the show at 9:40 to talk about two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan and his Hall of Fame induction. And in between those two, Brian Boyer, the communications director of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, will be with me. That's right around 9:20. A lot to get to. We'll do it next, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's got a 5-length lead on his competition. It is California Chrome in front. And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby.
And the final furlong of the Kentucky Derby. And it's going to be Big Brown bounding home to a convincing win in the Run for the Roses. It is Big Brown by 5 on the wire.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
And Animal Kingdom is pouncing late under John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside, who goes the lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the Derby.
It's American Pharoah in front, firing line. Dorkman is third, Frosted is fourth. Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com here in the month of May. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me as we roll on with a special Hall of Fame edition of the Equine Forum this morning. I've been telling you for years that every show is a Hall of Fame edition, but this one a little bit different because we're honoring the 2020 Hall of Fame inductees. And if you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Heedley Bell just a short time ago, talking about his mother, Alice Chandler, who will be one of the Pillars of the Turf inductees. Or if you missed my interview with the folks from Farm Paint and Tenda, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. You can do that at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Well, Mark Cassie is one of just two inductees in the contemporary category. The other two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan, who we'll talk about later with his trainer, Charlie Lopresti. But Mark has been on the ballot the last couple of years, hasn't gotten in. Well, all he does is come out last year and win the Preakness and the Belmont with two different horses, and boom, Mark Cassie's in the Hall of Fame, and he's with me now here on HRRN. Mark, good morning, and congratulations, Hall of Famer.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Thank you. Sounds good. I like that.
Yeah, you're one of just a few people who can, I can actually say congratulations, dual Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I got it. It's funny. I got a thing from Jay Preeman the other day. He said, now if you could just do Mexico, you'd have all of North America covered, and they have good guacamole.
Are we going to see a string down in what's the racetrack in Mexico, in Mexico City? Will we see a Mark Cassie string down there?
Let me think about it. No. That's what I tell my son all the time. He asks me a question. I'll say, let me think about it. No.
All right. Let's be honest here. People view Mark Cassie as being a Canadian. You are not a Canadian. You grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. You started running horses at the Great Barrington Fair in Massachusetts when you were 17 years old. Did you ever imagine, Mark, that this career would end up where it has?
Well, I mean, you know, as I, you know, I told my dad when I was like 12 or so, I said, I'm going to end up in here one day. Stop. Don't let him get up. But I told him that. And I mean, I really only started thinking about it, Mike, thinking that it was possible maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So then I thought, well, it was, you know, maybe possible. It was definitely number one on my things to do list. So, it's just such an honor.
Tell me about getting the news that you were going to be inducted this year.
I was out on the track, as I am now. You're probably hearing horses go by, so we're still in the middle of training. But it gave me chills, a lot of emotions, and in the last few days have been a lot of reflection. You know, it was asking me. I've done a lot of interviews and stuff, and you know, it was asking me, you know, do you think about the great horses that got you in there? And they were a big part of it, but it was more about great people that got me in there. You know, people that made sacrifices on my behalf, you know, my mom being one, my dad, you know.
How about some of the owners that have supported you over the years and the relationship you've developed with them?
Well, I mean, you know, it goes way back. But, I mean, like I said, if there was a timeline, you think, I had a guy named Robert Wilson who passed away some time ago. He was, you know, he gave me my first horses along with my dad. And then, of course, I think the first person that really saw so much in me was maybe Harry Mangurian. You know, he let me, and it wasn't so much on a racing. It was more on just overall general manager and breeding, and we did have some training. A lot of people don't realize, but for about, I want to say 8 or 10 years, I didn't train very many horses. I was more involved in large breeding operation. I was the general manager of Mockingbird Farm. But a of recent years, I would say there's five or six, seven people that if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here. And one would be Bill Farish. A lot of people don't know, but at one point in time, I was thinking about hanging it up. I was training in Toronto, and I felt like I was getting everybody's third and fourth strings. And I was like, you know, what am I going to achieve doing this? And I told him, and he went and formed a partnership called Woodford Racing, and he got me kind of going. And then through that, I met Mr. Oxley, and then, of course, Gary Barber came along. And, I mean, Gary Barber has been – both Oxley and Barber have been so instrumental. And then, of course, Mrs. Weber. I have a longtime client, Gabe Grossberg, and trained some for Melnick. So, you know, those people – I think without any of those people, what about Mr. Matheson, you know, with Teppan? So there's lots of great people that have helped me get here. My mom made a decision when I was 13, her and my father got a divorce, and she had a good chance to make me, you know, have me go with her, which would have taken me away from racing. And I told her at that point in time, I said, Mom, if you truly love me, you'll let me stay with Dad and the horses. And she did that, you know. That's how much she loved me. And, you know, I'll never forget that. And she still, you know, she gets excited every time. She called me the other day. She said she lives in northern Indiana. She goes, I just read a quote in the sports page, and it was your quote. She was so excited about that, you know. And then, of course, she called me after finding out that I had been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, you know, my father passed away 2 years back, but I'm sure he's up there looking down.
You mentioned, Mark, that you've spent time doing quite a bit of reflection as you were preparing for some of these interviews and talking about your career. Outside of the people that you just mentioned, what other moments maybe came to mind, and even moments that might have surprised you as you were doing reflection and thinking about your career that maybe had kind of slipped to the back of your mind and then came to the forefront as you were thinking about this dual Hall of Fame career of yours? What are some of those moments?
Well, obviously, you know, Norman was a big part of it too. Not only was he such an instrumental part of the training part, but he was also very instrumental in getting me to open back up and come to North America, back into the U.S. Had that not happened, you know, you wouldn't be talking to me today as a Hall of Famer. There's just so many. Oh, I don't even know. A big part of where I am today is making the decision to go to Woodbine 25 years ago, because it allowed me, you know, to show what, I actually, a lot of people don't know, but I was leading trainer in Kentucky in the mid-80s. Just kind of got tired of all the moving and everything. That's why I went to Canada. And that was a huge move for me. I mean, there's so many spots, Mike, that had I went left instead of right or right, you know, if I hadn't went the path, would I be here today? Probably not. My wife, Tina, has been so instrumental, too, over the last 20 years. She's my biggest fan, but more than that, she runs, you know, we have a huge business, not only in the U.S. and Canada, and she oversees all that, which allows me to train horses. And, you know, to pay attention to horses, I don't really have to worry about a lot of that. She may ask me a question here or there, but I don't have to do that. So meeting her was definitely a big deal 20 years ago.
Talking with dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As you can hear the wind blowing through his cell phone, he's standing there watching his horses train. The work never ends, even when you're in two Hall of Fames. Mark, I can remember a few years back, I had a chance to visit with Richard Mandela on our Trainer Talk program, which you've appeared on many times with me. And I asked Richard about some of his other hobbies and interests that he had, and he paused for a second and he said, I really don't. I don't have anything outside of horse racing that really that I'm latched on to. You, on the other hand, you've been able to do this and reach this level. You have your son's baseball games that you attend. You have other interests outside of racing, but I know racing is your life. You've taken a little different approach to this. Talk a little bit about how you've been able to reach this level and still balance everything else.
Well, you know what? As you get older, you realize that some things are more important. Unfortunately, with Norman and my older children, I wasn't able to spend as much time with them as I am now with my son, Colby. I feel bad about that. But when you're in the, you know, when you're in the startup of your career, it's much more difficult. Horse racing consumes me. I do it every day, pretty well all day. So I like to fish. So I decided the best way to do that was we built two ponds in our front yard. So when I get frustrated or want a little break, I walk out and I fish for 10 minutes. You'll see, if you see the front of my house, there will be about four or five fishing poles there. And I walk out. I've already caught a bass early this morning for light. I walk out and do that.
Are they fully stocked ponds? Are they completely fully stocked with all the fish?
We raised them from when they were little minnows. I mean, I caught a 7-pounder the other day. Colby caught 11-pounder, and they're all homegrown. They started from being little. You know, I think we bought 100 bass that were maybe 3 or 4 inches long, put them in there, and yeah, so we've grown them. So I do that. Through the coronavirus, I was getting kind of bored. You know, I'm at home, so we built a baseball field. also working on that. And then a lot of people don't know. I like playing. I play chess. I play it online. I play about 20, 30 games at a time. You have to make one move every 5 days. That's the minimum. Sometimes I make 2 or 3 moves in a day, and sometimes I may get to where I'll get a warning that I haven't played in 5 days. But it's something I do early in the morning and late at night when I'm not getting a bunch of phone calls and whatever. And I think it keeps my mind, you know, thinking, and I'm a strategizer. I love strategies, and I do it with my horses as well. And so, yeah. And then I'm lucky. I'm married to my best friend. And so we enjoy doing nothing, sitting around. She'll sit at her desk behind her computer, and I'll sit at my desk behind, and we sit next to each other. So, you know, I'm a very, very fortunate man.
I know you have to go train these horses, Mark. I know you're busy this morning, but you have to tell me just a little bit more about this baseball field. As you were saying that, I'm picturing Field of Dreams with a cornfield out in the outfield and the lights, and build it and they will come. Tell me about this baseball field.
Well, our outfield, center field is our pond, where our bass are. So if you really get a hold of one, you're going to put it into the pond. one side of our house has a big window, which is our bathroom. And I got our maintenance crew to put plexiglass up in front of that in case somebody fouls one off. But, now it's a full infield, and, it's nice. And, now that the boys are now allowed to travel a little bit more, they come over. We practiced last night. So actually my wife's a pretty good hitter as well. She'll get out and she hits ground balls to Colby and I, and then we have his friends over, and we're getting plenty of exercise, and it's been. I think the key in so many ways is, this is my philosophy in life, you got to make good things happen out of bad situations. Something I've said a long time ago, and I don't play golf anymore. I used to play before Colby was born, is when you hit a ball into the woods, you can look at it one of two ways. You can say, hell, I hit the ball into the woods, or you can say, now what kind of great shot can I hit to get out of the woods? And so that's kind of the way I live each and every day. And, we're just lucky. We're so lucky through all this that we've been able to continue to train. I know there's a lot of people out there that are not as fortunate, and I feel for them and I pray for them. But we're lucky, and you know what? It's just allowed us to have a little more family time too. So Colby, you won't be long. Colby, you'll be, you know, going to college, and we're not going to have that time. So we've enjoyed that, my wife and I.
Yeah, I'll come hang out on the baseball field with you and do a little bass fishing for sure. I don't know if I played baseball
anytime,
all the way through college, anytime. So you're talking my language here. Let's get together and do that. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure. Anytime.
Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I just invited myself to his baseball field and his bass pond. So one of the true good guys in the sport, all class, as I like to say. And, Mark, you've always been like that, and I can't thank you enough for your time and well-deserved honor. Congratulations on getting into that Horse Racing Hall of Fame.
Okay, just one second, Mike. She just galloped. She doesn't go to the gate. Just galloped. Sorry about that, but we're still... I'm standing over by the starting gate, and I just had to give some instructions to a rider. But
I was just wrapping it up and letting you go.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. You have a great day.
Thanks, bud. Congratulations.
Bye.
All right. Nobody better. Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fun stuff. Fascinating interview, talking about some of the things he does outside of the sport and his dedication, too. He's, make no bones about it, he's a guy that has dedicated his life to this game. And nice to see him get into the Hall of Fame here in 2020. When I come back, I'm going to visit with Brian Boyer, who is the communications director of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. He'll talk about some of the other inductees, maybe some of the historical inductees that are going to be honored on August 7th. And then Charlie Lopresti coming up at 9:40 to talk about two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented all month long by FarmPaint.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 6 black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, 3-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion 3-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference.
Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
They've run 3/4 of a mile in 1:10 flat, and it's AP Indy with a short lead. Colony Light right there at his neck on the outside. Berkeley Fitz moving into contention third. Repletion has been left behind. They straightened away into the stretch, and now Eddie Delahousse asking more run from AP Indy, and the response is immediate. AP Indy headlong into the final furlong by 5. Colony Light has been left in his impressive wake.
AP Indy wins with something left.
Well, did he ever. AP Indy winning the Peter Pan Stakes in 1992. Tom Durkin had the call. As we know, AP Indy, Hall of Famer, would go on and win the Belmont Stakes after that effort. And he is one of several outstanding horses inducted into that National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. The namesake of that race, Peter Pan, also inducted. And this is the weekend when we would typically be getting ready for the Peter Pan Stakes and looking ahead to a race like the Belmont, but because of the situation facing our nation and our world, that will not be the case on this weekend. But it doesn't take away from the luster of horses like Peter Pan and like AP Indy. And joining me now is the communications director of the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, Brian Boyer. Brian, good morning.
Hey, Mike, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. And, it's always fun to reflect on some of the horses that maybe aren't at the top of our mind, every day. Horses, I mean, AP Indy certainly speaks for itself, but a horse like Peter Pan, for example, who is a Hall of Famer, people may forget that when they look at a horse like Peter Pan.
Yeah, I think he's got a really interesting legacy. I mean, he was around the early 1900s, and he got kind of caught up in the same time that, Colin and Sizenby were around, and, maybe didn't get some of the publicity of those horses. But, this was a horse that was sired by Commando, who's in the Hall of Fame. His grandsire, Domino, was in the Hall of Fame. And he was an excellent racehorse as both a two-year-old and a three-year-old. At two, he won the Hopeful. He won the Flash Stakes, which was a huge race back then. And at three, he came back. He won the Belmont, the Brooklyn Derby, the Brighton Handicap, which is a big race then. And he was very popular during his day. I mean, he was trained by James Rowe, who was a Hall of Famer. He was bred and owned by James R. Keene, who was pretty much the titan of the sport during that time. So, Peter Pan's a horse that, then went on to become a very influential sire. He was the foundation sire for Harry Payne Whitney. And he, one of his biggest horses he sired was Black Tony, who wound up being the foundation sire for E.R. Bradley's Idle Hour operation. So he's got a tremendous legacy.
Yeah. Such a great influence, across the board, Peter Pan. You know, I had the chance in the first half of the program to visit with Heedley Bell, who is the son of Alice Chandler, who was one of the pillars of the turf that will go into the Hall of Fame on August 7th. Also had a chance in the last segment to visit with Mark Cassie. Charlie Lepresi is coming up next to visit and talk about Wise Dan. But there are other inductees that I haven't had the opportunity to focus on yet, and I'm hoping you can shed some light on their career and their credentials. Somebody like jockey Daryl McHarga, for example, and racehorse Tom Bowling. Tell me a little bit about them.
Sure. Daryl was one of the top jockeys of, the mid to late 1970s and early 1980s. And, I mean, that was a golden era for jockeys in this country. And Daryl was right up there with these guys. He won the Eclipse Award in 1978, and he had an unbelievable year that year. He had $6.1 million in earnings that year, which was a new North American record. He won 375 races, which was a very big total at the time. And he led all the riders with 37 stakes wins. And he raced from 1972 through 1978. He won more than 2,500 career races. He had a six-year stretch where he was in the top 10 in earnings every year. He won the Preakness. You know, the graded stakes, they weren't as numerous as they are now, but, you know, according to Equibase data, in a 12-year span, he won 79 graded stakes, which was a very impressive total. This was a guy who rode John Henry to six graded wins. He rode Hall of Famer's Ancient Title and My Juliet, other top horses like General Assembly and Vigors. And he had success over in Europe, too. He won the 84 Irish St. Ledger, the 84 Jockey Club Cup at Ascot. So this was a very, very good jockey during a very, very good era of jockeys. And, you know, he's had a good career since then as a steward in California. And for the last 5 years, he's been the chief state steward in California. So he stayed in the sport, and, you know, it's great to see him get recognized.
Yeah, I have to ask you, did I get his last name correct when I pronounced it?
It's McHarg. Daryl McHarg.
McHarg. Yeah, see, I it's funny because I asked you yesterday, and you sent me the phonetic spelling, and I thought I had it right, and I said, you know what, I better double-check. This gentleman just got into the Hall of Fame. Let's make sure we get it right. So Daryl McHarg, longtime jockey and somebody who has had so much success in this sport. And then racehorse Tom Bowling going to be inducted by virtue of the Historic Review Committee too.
Yeah, and this is, you know, with all due respect to all the others, you know, I'm a huge lover of the sport's early history. And, you know, Tom Bowling goes back to the 1870s, so he's certainly not familiar to majority of racing fans. And this is one of the great things that our Historic Review Committee gets to do is kind of look through who slipped through the cracks, you know, over the years. And Tom Bowling is an absolute Hall of Famer, and he's been considered for a number of years through this committee, but we've got such a backlog of such great candidates that it took this long. But this was a horse that it took him until his third try to break his maiden, but then he won 14 out of his final 15 career starts. You know, he set a 6-furlong American record as a 2-year-old. At age 3, he won the Travers at 1 3/4, beating the Belmont winner of that year. He won the Jerome, the Dixie as well. So a couple of stakes that are, you know, still run these days that you'd be familiar with. But yeah, he won 14 of 17 lifetime. He was retrospectively recognized as a champion at both age 2 and 3. Just a very impressive horse. He was trained by Ansel Williamson, who was a Hall of Famer, and by Hal Price McGrath, who bred and owned him, who was one of the really great characters of the 19th century. So it's really cool to get these old horses and you know, characters from yesteryear recognized.
Visiting with Brian Boyer from the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame in Saratoga. Brian, there are two other pillars of the turf which I have not had the opportunity to talk about yet. I did visit with Heedley, as I mentioned, to talk about his mother, Alice Chandler, founder of Millridge Farm here in Lexington. But J. Keene Dangerfield Jr. and George Widener Jr., tell me a little bit about them and their credentials.
Sure. Mr. Dangerfield is generally regarded by a lot of people as you know, the greatest steward in North American racing history. And he had such an influence on the game that way and as an executive. He was the chief state steward in Kentucky for a dozen years. And this is after a career as a trainer. He started off as a trainer, had a little bit of success, served in World War II. And then after the war, he accepted his first steward's position at Narragansett in 1948. And he was looked at by just about every track as a guy they wanted to bring in for their meets. He was an association steward at 17 different tracks in his career. Along with being the chief state steward in Kentucky, he had that same role in New Jersey and in Illinois. He was so well thought of, you know, he became basically the only steward that I can think of that won the Eclipse Award of Merit. You know, he was elected to the Jockey Club. So that gives an idea of how he was so respected throughout the sport. And the pillars of the turf category only came along in 2013. So, you know, for a lot of years, we were honoring top breeders and owners, and we've kind of branched out the last couple of years to recognize some of these other really important people that have made an impact on the sport in other ways. And Keene Dangerfield is certainly one of those guys, and it's great to see him get in. George Widener, he's just, you know, one of those traditional men of the turf. And by that, I mean, he had an influence in so many ways during the 20th century. Owner, breeder, leader of the sport. He was elected to the Jockey Club when he was still in his 20s. So that told you the type of influence he was having at an early age. He had the old Erdenheim farm near Philadelphia. He had a major farm in Lexington, the old Kenny farm. He bred over 100 stakes winners. As an owner, he won the Traverse Stakes 5 times, which ties the record. He got a Belmont win. You know, he had 830, was one of his horses, a Hall of Fame member. And he was big as far as leader. He was the chairman of the Jockey Club for 14 years. He chaired the group that was the forerunner of NYRA. It was called the Greater New York Association at the time. And he was the president of the National Museum of Racing from 1960 to 1968. So this was a gentleman who had an influence on the sport, you know, going all the way back to the 1920s up through about 1970. So about a half century of major influence in racing. So it's great to see these guys honored.
Brian, as always, you're going to have horses and individuals that are going to be on the outside looking in that did not get in this year. Horses like Blind Luck and Game On Dude and Kona Gold and Harvard to Grace, for example. Rags to Riches didn't get in. Corey Nakatani did not get in. Doug O'Neill, Christophe Clement did not make it in this year. Spend just a minute talking about the voting process and the way this all works.
Sure. It's the Hall of Fame. Every year there's going to be people that are thrilled and there's going to be people who are disappointed with the selections that get in. It's a difficult process to get into the Hall of Fame, and I think it should be a difficult process to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, this is the highest career honor there is, and like you mentioned, those are all excellent names, and just to be able to get to the ballot is an incredible thing. And a lot of those candidates you mentioned will, I think, eventually be Hall of Famers. So for the contemporary process, which is the modern era of voting, we have a nominating committee, which is made up of 16 members, and they whittle down from about 90 to 95 candidates each year to make a ballot. And to make the ballot, just to do that, they have to receive 2/3 of approval from the nominating committee. And then the ballots go out. We had 11 finalists this year, as you mentioned, and 2 of them were elected. So the voters, they can vote for as many as they want or as few as they want. There's no restrictions, so it's not like it's a political thing where if you have a super strong year, other candidates can't get in. Anybody can vote for as many candidates as they want, and those who get 50% plus one, that get the majority of the vote, will be elected to the Hall of Fame. So that's pretty much the process and how it works. The nominating committee takes a lot of pride in crafting a ballot that they feel is worthy of the highest honor. So it's difficult, and it's tough to, you know, see guys and horses and, you know, your favorites that don't make it. But if you make the ballot, there's a good chance that sooner or later you're going to have a good shot at getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and let's not forget, and as a media person, I need to point this out, that Charles C. Canty and Billy Reed were both named to the National Museum of Racing's Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor. That announcement came out in mid-December last year, and I can't think of two more deserving individuals than Charles C. and Billy Reed to be in that Roll of Honor.
Yeah, that's another great honor that we do at the museum. We've already had a little ceremony down in Lexington to honor Billy, Ed Bowen, who's our chairman of the nominating committee, as well as the Joe Hirsch committee, set up a nice event for Billy at the Thoroughbred Club down there and had a good time. And we're hoping to do something with Charlesy. We talked to her about doing something at Saratoga this summer, but that's obviously kind of all up in the air with a lot of the things that are going on right now. But we'll definitely find a way to have a nice little event for her as well.
Well, again, we're looking at August 7th as the tentative date for the Hall of Fame inductions this year. Those 7 new members will be inducted at the Fasig Tipton Humphrey S. Finney Sales Pavilion in Saratoga, if indeed we are able to gather and do those types of things in Saratoga Springs. But, Brian, listen, I appreciate the visit here. Thanks for filling us in on all of the other inductees. It's quite an honor, and really appreciate all your hard work and dedication.
Great to be on with you. Take care, Mike. Thanks.
All right, thanks. And, of course, this interview and all of our guests brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Coming up next, Charlie Lopresti looks back on the career of Hall of Famer Wise Dan. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented all month long by FarmPaint.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Adena Springs Homebred Champion Macho Uno is a proven source of classic speed and a great stallion to start off young mares. Macho Uno's runners average $88,000, higher than the likes of Malibu Moon and More Than Ready. He's the sire of five Grade 1 winners and three classic horses, including multiple Grade 1 winning Sprinter and Miler Private Zone and Breeders' Cup Classic Champion Mucho Macho Man, who is now North America's number one third crop sire, having produced this year's sensational Pegasus World Cup hero, Mucho Gusto. Along with Del Mar Grade 2 winner and Grade 1 place Mucho Unusual, stakes winner Mucho Amor, multiple graded placed Bellora, and $575,000 juvenile and TDN Rising Star Fortin Hill. Mucho Macho Man's juveniles average $122,000 at the OBS March sale, higher than Liam's Map, Hard Spun, and Uncle Mo. Macho Uno and Mucho Macho Man, standing the 2020 season for $10,000 at Adena Springs. Visit adenastallions.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Inside the final furlong now, and it is Wise Dan and John Velasquez who go to a lead of two lengths. Inside the final 16th, it is Wise Dan clearing away to take the Clark handicap. Wise Dan wins.
Last 16th of a mile, Wise Dan, a jaw-dropping performance to win the Rico Woodbine Mile.
But here's Wise Dan alongside of Approval. Silencio coming up the fence. Wise Dan's got him. Wise Dan, brilliant in the mile. Wise Dan gets his head in front. The first $1 million race in Keeneland history, the Shadwell Turf Mile, to Wise Dan with a breathtaking stretch rally.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Been a busy program honoring so many of this year's Hall of Fame inductees. And we wrap it up by taking a look at two-time Horse of the Year Wise Dan. That little montage, just a snippet of the unbelievable success Wise Dan had in our sport at the highest level. And with me now is the man who knows him as well as anybody. That's his trainer, Charlie Lopresti. Charlie, first of all, congratulations, my friend. What an honor.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is an incredible honor to have a horse of that caliber.
And he's still with you to this day, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's there at our farm. He's turned out with his brother, Successful Dan, at our farm.
Did you? Were you the one to break the news to him that he was in the Hall of Fame?
I think Amy probably did it before I did, but I was in there petting on him yesterday.
Did he get a few extra carrots, or what's his favorite treat?
Oh, he kind of likes to go out on grass and roll around in the mud. That's his happy thing, and to chase his brother around.
Well, he can roll around in as much mud as he wants to, and he can do it for the rest of his life as a Hall of Famer. Pretty special stuff. Two-time Horse of the Year in 2012 and in 2013, champion older male and champion male turf horse in both those years. And, you know, one thing that strikes me is that is tremendous in its own right. But, Charlie, when you think about the races that he won twice, which is so hard to do. Horses like the races like the Woodbine Mile and the Shadwell Turf Mile and the Makers 46, the Woodford Reserve, the Four Star Dave and the Firecracker. I mean, come on. That's stuff that legends are made of.
Well, you know, I hate to brag on him, but you know, when you look back on it, I was telling Reeve this morning, we're talking about. I said, you know, you just forget about the races, and then all of a sudden, some like Keeneland put that thing on their webpage and started looking back at all his races, and then you look at the Breeders' Cup Mile twice and the Woodbine races, and like you say, to duplicate it and come back every year, and whether he has a good trip, bad trip, good post, bad post, he just pulls it off.
What was it that made Wise Dan such a good racehorse?
I think he just had an amazing amount of ability, and he had a big heart and a desire to win. Like Johnny Velasquez used to say, he knows how to win races.
Yeah, and he won so many big ones throughout his career. Do you remember the very first time you laid eyes on him?
Yeah, we had him from when he was a weanling, and we raised him there at our farm. And I'll be honest with you, if somebody says, well, go back to the beginning, did you ever think he was that kind of horse? Really, as a 2-year-old, even when we broke him, he just was a, you know, big, pretty chestnut horse. But, I mean, I can't say that I said, well, this is going to be a champion of the caliber that he is. And even when we had him at the track at 2, you know, he was big, gangly. He really didn't get it all together. What it really came together was his 3-year-old year, the winter of his 3-year-old year, February, March. We started breezing him. Then we could see that he had some talent. But he was difficult to deal with, too. I mean, he was just really, really, really strong and wanted to do more than you wanted a horse to do that hadn't run yet. But looking back on it, I never realized, you know, his stride and the efficiency of his stride. He just was a horse that would gallop, you know, 14, 13 to the furlong, and that's just the way he traveled. I mean, he's just a big, long-strided, powerful horse.
Yeah, you know, he won on every surface we have in the sport, but when he first started his career in 2010, he was competing in graded stakes races that were sprint races on the dirt. What led you to think that maybe that was going to be his calling before you switched him over to the grass and longer races?
Well, if you look back, you know, we ran him. Back when Keeneland was synthetic, and so we could train here all winter on the main track, we had him ready to run. And I worked him from the gate one morning. He went like 58 and change from the gate with another horse. And I was like, wow. I mean, he did it really easy. I mean, it wasn't like we asked him to do that. So long story short, we put him on, you know, we wanted to get a start on him. And we ran him at Turfway. I think it was the end of February probably. And he got beat. He was down on the inside. He kind of ran a little green, you know. I think he wound up being fifth or fourth. I can't remember. And then we ran him at Turfway again on the spiral day, and that's when he won by 15 lengths in the second start. And that was the race that I was kind of looking for the first time he ran, the way he had trained. And then we couldn't run him back in an allowance race, and the Keeneland, because the race didn't go. So we ran him Churchill, I think it was Derby Day, and maybe 7 furlongs. And that was on the dirt, and he won that day impressive again. And then he came back, and he was a little bit off in his hind end, and we found the beginnings of a hairline crack in a hind ankle. And so we gave him the summer off, and we got started. Well, I'd say we gave him the spring off. And then we started training him for the fall, and he trained so good that I told Mr. Fink, I said, this horse is just amazing. We'll just run him in the stake race there at Keeneland, and we did. He won that, the Phoenix, and he wound up in the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Yeah, just amazing to think about the way things come together for a horse like this, and then to see the success that he had as he continued to mature. Charlie, when you hear the word Wise Dan and you reflect upon his career, what are a couple of the moments that are always going to stand out to you?
I guess, you know, the biggest one, I guess there's so many of them, it's hard to think of, you know, to talk about them. But I guess when he came back from colic surgery and he went to Saratoga and he won there, that was just, I mean, horses just don't do that. They just don't do that. But there's so, I mean, it's hard to say there's so many of them. And I can tell stories and I could talk for hours about it, you know, how he got in grass races and what he did when he went to Woodbine and what he did when he went to the Breeders' Cup. And he was just a horse that every time you loaded him in the gate, you knew he was going to run his race.
Well, it's something with that family because his brother, who you mentioned, Successful Dan, who is with him now on the farm, and they get to be together, which is so cool. But he was no slouch either. I mean, he won 8 of 15 starts. He earned just shy of $1 million in his career. There's just something about that family.
Well, I can tell you, Successful Dan, and there's a few people that have been around Successful Dan. Julian LaPerue rode him the whole time, and he rode Wise Dan. The grooms, my assistants that were around him, Successful Dan was every bit as good or maybe even a little bit better. And I know that's crazy to say, but he was plagued by injuries. I mean, he was just not the soundest horse. If he was a sound horse, he would have won a Breeders' Cup race. I mean, you look at the horses that he beat, Fort Larned, Mucho Macho Man. I mean, it just, but every time you get two or three races out of him, you'd have to put him on the shelf again. And that's what really hurt his career. I feel pretty certain that he could have won a Breeders' Cup race.
Yeah, he was outstanding. And now to have the two of them together, be able to look out and to be able to go visit the two of them on your farm, that's, again, I talk about the things that movies are made of. That there might be a Wise Dan movie at some point. I think there probably should be.
Well, somebody said that to me. You ought to write a book about him. And, you know, we got a lot of stories to tell, a lot of stories that a lot of people don't even know about.
What's your favorite Wise Dan story to tell?
I guess, I will tell you my favorite Wise Dan story. When we were at Woodbine, there was a gentleman that came by the barn, and he said, there's a little girl that would love to see Wise Dan. Is there any way that we could get her a picture with him? And I said, and her mom was with the man. And so we'll bring her out here. And her mom just kind of stood there and didn't say anything. And he talked me off to the side, and he said, well, she's in a wheelchair. And I said, well, where's she at? He goes, well, she's parked out there on the road in a minivan. And so Reeve and I said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll bring him out there. Can you get her to come out and we'll get a picture? You know. And so we brought Wise Dan around the front of the barn, and we went out in the parking lot there. And they opened the back door, the side door of the minivan, and they had a ramp, and they rolled her out on the ramp to the ground. And most horses that see that would be, I mean, they'd spook or run away from it. Wise Dan took Reeve and I and drug us right to the girl in the wheelchair, and he put his head down in front of her. And you ought to have seen the smile on her face and the picture. It brought tears to your eyes. And we told that, they said after the Woodbine race, up in the director's room, they interviewed me, and they said, what was the best thing about, you know, this race today? And I told that story, and the whole place just stood up and applauded. And that's probably one of my best Wise Dan stories.
Well, Charlie, thanks for making me tear up on a Saturday morning. Appreciate that, my friend.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of stories like that. I can tell you things about him that, I mean, he was just a different type of horse. He was just different. Not only was he a good racehorse, he was really smart, and he had an unbelievable personality.
Well, and now a well-deserved honor of being in the Hall of Fame. Charlie, I asked you, and before I let you go, one last question, but I asked you about Wise Dan getting the news that he was in the Hall of Fame. How did you find out that he was definitely in this year?
Well, I got a call on Wednesday from them, and they told me that he was going to be. They told me he had 94% of the votes, but they didn't want it, you know, publicized until Wednesday. But I mean, that's how I knew, and I always felt like that he should be. But you know, as his trainer, it's kind of hard to say that because, you know, I'm biased about him, and I still think he's one of the best horses that we've seen in a long time. And I know we've had some really good horses here, you know, Triple Crown horses, but, I mean, that horse, he did everything that he was ever asked to do. And like I told you just a little while ago, to come back from colic surgery that summer, I mean, it was just amazing. We did colic surgery on him. 2 days after the surgery, come on back to the farm, he bounced off the trailer like nothing happened. I was like, God, this horse is just, he must be made of iron or something.
Yeah, special horse and special trainer, too, Charlie Lopresti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Charlie, listen, I can't thank you enough for spending a little time here looking back on the big horse, and congratulations to you, to your family, to your team, and to Wise Dan on that tremendous honor.
Well, thank you so much. It means a lot to me to be on your show and talk about him.
Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate it, my friend. Congrats. All right, Charlie Lopresti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And like all of our guests, he is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'll be back to wrap this one up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Grade Stakes producer, Appealing Zophie. His exceptional first foals are arriving now. Taprit, standing for 12,500 at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery won impressively in his two-year-old debut at Santa Anita. From there, he captured the Grade 3 Bob Hope Stakes and completed his juvenile campaign with a dominant performance in the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity. At 3, the top-rated son of Candy Ride sizzled in the San Felipe. Now, his much-anticipated first crop are bringing top dollar in the sales ring. Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
They say singing can help you remember things, so here's some tips for parents out there during these tough times.
Number one.
Make sure your kids wash their hands for 20 seconds after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside.
Two.
Virtual play dates. Social and physical distancing can help save lives.
Three.
Tell them they're safe and show your love and pride. Yes, we'll get through this together. Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, a reminder that inside the May 9th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet, you won't want to miss these stories. Too much?
Yeah, trainer Bob Baffert takes both divisions of the Arkansas Derby with Charlatan and Nadal and appears to be holding a lot of cards on that Triple Crown trail. As usual, advancing racing in a difficult time, ADW provides a path forward, but is this model something that will work long term? That's by Frank Anks. It's all inside the Blood Horse magazine and tablet, and you can go to Blood Horse Daily as well and check out the largest subscriber base of any thoroughbred industry electronic daily newsletter. You can do that at Blood Horse Daily. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download your copy today. My thanks to all of our guests for helping to make this show possible. The folks from Farm Paint and from Tenda, that's Lori Douglas and Catherine White. Heedley Bell talking about Alice Chandler, special interview there in the first half of the program. Mark Cassie, Brian Boyer, and Charlie Lopresti looking back on Wise Dan. Results of our poll question today: if racetracks are given permission to allow fans on site, but there is still no COVID-19 vaccine, will you go? 67%. Of HRN Nation saying, yes, we will go. 119 days, 8 hours, 50 minutes, and 36 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, and only 128 days, 9 hours, 16 minutes until the Steelers kick off their campaign. Monday Night Football against the Giants. Can't wait. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers.